Now, so the National Trust is the fourth biggest landowner. What does it own? Now, again, the figures may not quite match because they're from different sources, but you get the general idea, I think. It owns a lot of land. It owns a lot of the coastline. Now, Britain is a collection of islands, so there's a lot of coast. And the Trust owns quite a good chunk of it. It owns a lot of ancient monuments, so like Stonehenge, or old churches or castles which are in ruins. So some very, very ancient places, some not so ancient, but ruins. It owns over 200 houses, so historic houses, mostly big ones, so I'll come back to them. It owns a lot of gardens. Many of the gardens are connected to houses, but not all of them. In some cases, the National Trust owns a garden. There is a house, but that's still in private hands. It owns mills, where corn was ground to make flour. It owns some pubs, some historic pubs. They're all in Northern Ireland. It owns some churches, some of which still function as churches, some of which don't, but they're typically of interest architecturally. It owns dovecots. Who knows what a dove is? What is a dove? It's a kind of bird. You know another name for it? Pigeon. Cot, little place where it lived. In the winter, in the past, people didn't have so much to eat. They often had to slaughter, kill off cows and sheep and pigs because it was too expensive to feed them over the winter. Fresh meat could be obtained from doves, pigeons. A trust owns complete farms. It owns villages, whole villages, and it owns some factories, some historic factories. Perhaps the first factory in Britain, in the world, to produce cotton goods, for example. It owns prisons, particular name being workhouse. In the past, up to, 150 years ago, if you were poor, had no work, had no money, you'd be put in something called a workhouse and made to work. Men in one part, women in another, children in another. Effectively prisons. The National Trust owns one of these. It's a beautiful building, but very sad lives were lived there in the past. And the Trust also owns small townhouses. It owns the houses where two of the Beatles lived. I'm sure you've heard of the Beatles. Pop group, so Paul McCartney, John Lennon's house, and Paul McCartney's house are owned by the National Trust. They're very ordinary houses. I grew up in a house like that, but now these are openers, if you like, museums. Now, in the last census, 2001, the population of Britain came out as 57 million. We have a census every 10 years, or on the 01. That's right, every 10. It's on the 01 anyway. Now, if we go back to 1800, there were 8.9 million people in this country. 50 years later, it's doubled. And for the first time, more people lived in the town than in the countryside. Now, agriculture in history has always been very important in this country, but in the 19th century, industry became very important too. As you know, the Industrial Revolution began here in England. This was the first country to build factories, to produce goods in a modern, still modern way, with machines rather than people doing the heavy work. Of course, in the early days, we took cotton from other countries, other materials from other countries, made goods in our factories and exported them again. Now, of course, your countries can make these things in your countries. If we're looking here, again, 1900, population doubled again. It's not increasing so much these days, but, well, let's say I've given the current figures. But the key thing is what was happening in the 19th century. So in the 19th century, an increase in population, people going to cities, people working in factories, and working long hours. People worked much longer hours in the past, and they worked 6 days a week. They didn't have a long weekend as we do. Many people now work 35 hours a week. Then they'd be working 60, 70 hours a week. That's leaving in the morning, in the winter, in the dark, working inside the dark factory, coming home in the dark. So never getting out, never seeing much beyond their work. So during the 19th century, as industrialization continued, many people began to get rather worried. Worried for a number of reasons about what was happening. First of all, they thought, if we're not careful, all of England in particular will be covered in factories. There won't be any land, any countryside left. England will be one big, steamy, smelly, cold, dirty, well, not sometimes very hot, factory. What will happen to the countryside? And in particular, people were worried about common land. Now, over the centuries, in villages, there's always been some land which is for everybody. Nobody owns it. Everybody can use it. An ordinary person can keep his one cow there. People can play football there. But during the 19th century, the government authorities began to turn a blind eye if somebody put a fence around the common land and said, no, it's mine. So I want it, so it's mine. So some people campaigned to say, no, we must keep this common land. We must have open spaces. We must have footpaths through the countryside where everybody can walk to enjoy the light, the air, the scenery.